Hello, everyone, and welcome to Season 5 of Goddamn GameCube. If you like our show, please leave us a rating on Spotify and subscribe on YouTube. Thank you, and enjoy today's episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Goddamn GameCube. Greg and Riley are your hosts today. Our friend John is back with us as well. And today we are discussing the very contentious Last of Us 2. There's a lot to say here. So, Riley, why don't you just start us off? Because there's so much to uncover. So let's just go for it.
Of course. So this is Last of Us Part 2, the second game in the series. It was released in 2020, similarly to the first one. It's a survival action adventure game developed by Naughty Dog and published by Sony Interactive Entertainment. This game is set 5 years after the first game, so it partially continues Joel and Ellie's story while expanding the universe a bit further to showcase some other perspectives, we'll say, for now. I did want to just kind of out of the way get into gameplay, like changes, updates there. I think those are pretty more clear cut than the other aspects of the game. I think that the traversal puzzles in this are a lot more organic and immersive than part one. It's very like you were going into a very particular state. Well, there's a ladder, I'll put it down in the first game. And this one, there is a little bit more thought put into these kinds of sequences, I would say. I think the crafting is in a good place as well. There's a little bit more options in the first game, but not so many that it became overwhelming to me. I think the ability to create silencers was a very welcome addition, you know, that you can't like abuse them. They only have a couple uses. I did think it was kind of a bummer that you can't use shivs to open up like caches anymore, because that was something I did like about the first game. There is a much wider range of melee weapons and firearms available in this one with a lot of their own strengths and quirks. So one of the big things, in addition to kind of maybe general thoughts here, what did you guys think about this new sort of system they had with these training manuals that are collectible and I believe are missable, some of them at least? Did you guys like these, and how did you build kind of your characters with these?
It's tough to say. I think it's kind of in line with what I thought about the first game in terms of gun upgrades.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like wholly realistic, but because they're training manuals, it puts you in the world a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's one of these games where I rarely use Resident Evil as a good example of something.
Yeah.
But you know, like, remember in like the original Resident Evil games, there are no gun upgrades. You get what you get. Your character is not upgradable. You are who you are.
Yeah.
I feel like in The Last of Us, I wish it was that. Where that would feel a bit more realistic to me.
Yeah.
Right?
You don't really get it under the hood as much.
Right, yeah. Where I feel like with The Last of Us, I tend to not check out because, you know, these games are very good.
Yeah.
But I tend to, maybe, I don't really like when they get gamier. I tend to like when when it feels less gamey to me. You know, does that make sense with a game like this where the narrative and the realism and relatability
really
has to be so high?
Right.
John, how you feel about this?
I thought kind of like the first one, it's actually kind of a difficult combat system.
Sure.
You have to be really careful. And so whenever I found anything to make my weapons more powerful, I was a happy man. I do want to say I loved the upgrade bench in this game. The detail of when you would, you know, power up a weapon.
You see it happening.
Yeah.
I thought that was really cool. That's unbelievable. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought this would come up way later and not in the first 4 minutes.
Yeah.
But there's one upgrade bench moment that I love.
Where you get attacked.
Yes.
Yes.
Where, oh my God, they do this thing where they ingrain an idea into your brain as a gamer and then break it.
Yeah.
You always think, oh, we're upgrade bench. It's safe. Like, it's essentially a loading
screen.
It's
almost like outside of the game.
It's almost outside of the game. But then you're at that moment when you're upgrading and you hear someone run up to you from behind.
Like,
that game fucking got me.
Yeah.
I said to Nick, I just got.
Yeah.
Like, that was a very good moment. But anyway,
that was
continue.
Awesome. No, yeah, I was just curious because, I mean, it's weird that you kind of, this is a unique situation where I guess upgrade trees or paths are kind of missable, where you can or cannot, you know, pick up these upgrade manuals.
Do you know what's funny?
Whatever.
This system actually exists in Dead Rising.
Really?
Where if you can find certain magazines about certain subjects, and if they're in your inventory, you're better at them.
Interesting.
It's really weird. I don't think they got it from that, but I'm going to say they did.
Yeah, let's say that. So, yep. There's a couple new infected classes in this. There's like the stalkers, which are kind of like these sneaky kind of guys who are running around. Those guys are crazy.
And I really like those. I'm sorry. Continue.
No. Yeah. And the shamblers, I guess, they're kind of like, they look a little Left 4 Dead-y. I think like visually not really that interesting compared to like the clickers or whatever. But in terms of variety, it was nice to have a couple different ones. You know, would you agree?
There's one specific stalker section where intern Nick was watching me play and I was locked in. Mm-hmm. Like I was kind of very slowly walking around with the shotgun and the stalkers are looking at you from around corners and running away from you. Yeah. I was like, yeah, this game fucks. Like it was, I was fucking into it.
Yeah. They're little imps and they'll like blend into the wall. You think they're dead and then they like crack out and fucking come after you.
I just love when I saw one peer looking at me from like around a wall. I was like, yeah, this rules. It's good.
It's really scary.
Yeah.
I think perhaps more interesting is the improvements to the human enemies, where I think they're a lot more intelligent than the first game.
Yeah.
Like when they're on patrol, they'll like kind of spin around and it's like, I was trying to sneak up on that guy. Yeah. And he's like spinning 360 degrees. And they now they have attack dogs that can sniff you out. You have like a smell trail. And towards the end, similar to Metal Gear, they have they start wearing helmets so you can't headshot them as you normally can. So I thought that was pretty cool. Do you have any other comments on the gameplay changes before we get into some aesthetics?
I really felt the smoothness of the gameplay in this game was unbelievable.
Yeah,
there's so many YouTube clips of people just putting up 10 minutes of beautiful gameplay. That was not the case with The Last of Us 1.
Right. Do you mean horrifically violent gameplay?
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, but like, you know, when Ellie jumps off the roof of a building and fucking stabs a guy in the neck on her way down, the dodge button I thought was really cool in this game.
About that, yeah.
That's a really cool addition. Yeah, just the smoothness, particularly with Ellie. Ellie's such a smooth character.
You're going to hear me say this a lot on this episode. The production of this game is very good.
It's phenomenal.
But by production, I mean the product you're putting in your PlayStation.
Yeah.
The combat is very smooth. It looks great, plays great, well optimized, sounds good. Like, it is a good production, no matter what the internet says about this game.
The production is, I think, unimpeachable.
Yeah.
It's really just like so any remaining kind of wrinkles when it came to production, gameplay, or aesthetics have been ironed out with this one.
And when I say production, I mean the disc as a whole. It's very
good. It definitely plays.
It's very good.
It plays very well.
Yeah. So a little bit getting further into that, I think an astounding level of visual fidelity and environmental detail. My PS4 sounded like it was going to explode every time I played this.
Yep.
It was very clearly like this is the high end of what this console is capable of. And particularly you're mentioning like the character animations are even better this time around. All the little touches when you see them actually make the modifications to their weapons.
Yeah.
It's like, something I actually always wanted to see in a game is when your character picks something up, they will physically put it in their backpack.
Yeah.
It's like, this is where I always thought games were going to get to, you know? So I think that's immense.
I've seen so many YouTube clips of like little details in The Last of Us 2, like when you jump into water and you step out and your backpack drips for a while.
Yes.
Or your shirt drips for a while. Oh my God.
If you're looking at the sun, they'll put their hand in front of their face.
Yes.
If it's raining, she'll pull her hood up. I think all that stuff is like I say, unimpeachable.
Yeah.
I think I want to say the highest praise I have for this game is with respect to the sound design and the mix. I think in particular, the gunfire and whenever like one of the infected enemies like makes a screech or whatever sound, it is mixed so much louder than anything else, and it really scares you.
Yes,
at least
it does.
For me, I think that was incredible. I think like I mentioned last time, the sort of guitar score is not really my thing, but I did like in this game there is kind of some muted like electronic tracks, like when you're in a tight spot, like in a Breaking Bad kind of score, where it's just like you're in the middle of a very tense situation, like, oh, these guys are gonna find me, and you just hear like the little bleeps and boops in the background.
What did you think of the Ellie plays guitar segments?
Fine. I liked them.
They're fine. I mean, that's what I remember.
It's like a little bit of a Wii thing, you know, like where you use the touchpad on the PlayStation controller.
Do you remember last time when you said like The Last of Us is missing leitmotifs and I said it's kind of Take on Me by Aha. Now you can play it. I'm like, great. Fucking God. All right. It's fine.
What did you think of him as a musician? Were you like, oh, this is stupid?
It was kind of two things. I said, this is cute, but also this is a horror game, and maybe I don't know why you can do this.
Well, I think it's semi pays off at the end, I guess.
You know what, dude? You kind of are going to make me eat my words a little bit. I think it's one of these things where when you're exposed to it, it's stupid, but then when it does a thing at the end, you're like, yeah, no, it wasn't stupid. Yeah.
It's a little bit more of the flavor rather than a central gameplay.
Well, also,
aspect,
we may have not brought it up. Doesn't Joel say in the first game he's going to teach her how to play?
Yes,
right? Yes, yep. He does.
So yep. It's paying that off at least.
Can I comment on the visual fidelity, like you were talking about, Riley? The set pieces in this game to me are fucking incredible.
Like insane.
Oh my God. Like the movie theater that you hole up in as Ellie later in the game. The aquarium that you hole up in as Abby in the game. Yep. The beginning going through the town that basically Joel's brother Tommy set up where people are dancing and there's snowball fights. It's just remarkable.
But like in terms of like, even like you go into a hotel at one point and every room feels like it's lived in, you know, like you're never questioning, you know, as you would in an older game, like, oh, I've seen this room before. It's like, it's all very, very well thought out.
Yeah.
I did want to get into that a little bit where, it's really hard for us to comment on this, but I feel like we had to, where, it's been widely reported that this team was like extremely overworked when developing this game, often putting in like 12 hour days, overnight shifts, that kind of thing. Well, I think we can all agree that this is like not an ideal or acceptable working condition. I'm curious about like, you know, let's have like a little exercise. If you were in charge, where would you have cut or compromised this game to scale back the workload?
The entire final segment.
You think so?
Yeah, or most of it.
I think maybe just in general, paring each segment down a little bit.
Oh, you know what? I'm sorry. You know what? I don't regret my last statement, but there's a lot of flashbacks to you walking and doing nothing. Like there's a lot of that.
I don't love that.
Even though I'm not saying those segments are worthless, there's a lot in there, but this game is what, double the length of the first one?
It's long. I remember they said the first one they wanted to feel like a good movie, the second one they wanted to feel like a good novel.
Sure. Jesus. Or like a series maybe. Yeah. I think opinions may vary, of course. I feel like the scale was like just too big for me. I think just in terms of like relative to the first game, because like you said, like 15 hours around or so thereabouts for the first game. This one's like closer to 30.
Yeah, it's big.
I think you could have pared down some of the heftier sequences a bit and concentrated on just like a couple of really detailed environments that felt, you know, maybe lived in enough to suggest a larger world, you know. There were a couple, like one or two, like bigger sandbox areas where you could explore like multiple different ruins. And I didn't dislike that. I thought that was fun. Like,
yeah,
I didn't,
isn't that the bank sequence where you get the shotgun?
Yeah,
right?
You go underwater, you get the shotgun and all that. And there's a couple other buildings nearby. I think, you're correct about the, I think maybe just too many flashback sequences that kind of interrupted the pace of like you're really into the piece by piece. And then it's like, oh, we're flashing back to 3 years ago again.
There's a couple of flashback segments, though, we have to admit are phenomenal.
There are.
Yeah. Like I said, it's not like they don't have any value. There's just a lot of them.
It happens. Yeah. It happens quite often. It reminded me a little bit of the Spider-Man game where you're like, I don't want to play Spider-Man.
Ready? If I were to do this, do you remember there's a lot of walking sequences in Gears of War where you're just walking and talking on the phone?
Control.
Like, you're kind of breaking up the pace of the game a lot.
Yeah. But, yeah, that's true.
Anyway.
So, before we get into story, anybody want to say anything else about kind of like the setup or anything else like that?
No, I think, like I said, this is a very good production. It plays as smooth as silk. So that's where I'm at there.
All right.
I think you used a good word, unimpeachable.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
I think, okay, so the meat of the discussion here is going to be the story here.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Okay, so right off the bat, I did feel that the introduction was a really effective way to not only catch you up, but also, you know, like remind audiences of what happened last time, but also further Joel's character a little bit where he's confessing to Tommy what happened. And it's like, yep, this is what happened. But now he's telling it to somebody for the first time.
Yes.
And you get a little bit of that.
That's a great point.
So it's basically set up, you know, 4 years later. Joel and Ellie are living with Joel's brother Tommy, his wife Maria, and several new friends in this settlement in Jackson, Wyoming.
Right.
So essentially what the setup of this, you get a nice little kind of tutorial, a little bit of like an immersive, there's like a snowball fight
that teaches you
how to like all the basic mechanics and stuff. We didn't mention there's also like prone like combat and stuff. And there's
fully prone.
Now in the first game, you could not go fully prone, right?
No,
it was crouch only. That's key to this game.
Yeah, because it takes the stealth a lot more seriously, and that's a nice tool in your belt there.
Yep.
But essentially, so the way this sets up, they're all kind of messing around in this town, and during a sort of routine patrol in the surrounding countryside, Joel and Tommy encounter this young girl named Abby, and they rescue her from this sort of horde of infected. You actually play as Abby very briefly in this section. And what happens is that so Abby effectively leads them back to her hideout where her group is there, and it turns on our guys and incapacitates both of them. So in the process of this, it's kind of cutting back and forth as it did in the previous game with the help of Ellie is kind of dating this new girl, Dina. Mm-hmm. Ellie essentially like tracks them down to this lodge, this like ski lodge in the mountains. And the big, huge thing, which was unfortunately leaked before this game came out, the big sort of setup here is that Ellie is forced to watch as Joel is savagely like beaten to death by Abby with a golf club.
Ugh.
So right off the bat,
a man chooses
a slam obey.
See, this is why we got you back. You know, it's like, it ties right into that.
It ties right in.
Okay, so Let's go around the room. Number one, how'd you feel about this moment? And number two, do you feel that this was a valid story decision?
So I'll start here. This was not spoiled for me before I played it, so I didn't know this was going to happen.
Yeah.
And when they did this, I kind of like did one of those like man nods where I'm just like, he's about to get it.
That's
right.
It.
And I said, oh, are they going to kill this my man off? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like it's going to happen. And I think it was, I don't know what the right word for this is. It happened so early where it's almost like it's intentionally supposed to be very surprising. We're killing off Joel in the first couple of hours,
yeah.
But it's almost perfect,
yeah.
Right? Where, hey man, like if you want your comeuppance for the last time, well, you know, we're taking a fucking nine iron to you in the first couple of hours. And I mean, I don't know whether it was this weird juxtaposition of, I was very surprised, but also I expected this, where I'm like, okay, they've got my dude on the ground. They just just shot him with a shotgun in the leg. I think we're done here.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Yeah.
And John,
I knew it was going to happen. It was spoiled for me. But I thought they handled the moment brilliantly well. I mean, Ellie's scream as Joel gets hit is so fucking disturbing.
Yeah.
But the moment that really blew me away was the moment after Joel's death, where you walk through his house and you're like grieving.
And she smells his jacket.
She smells his
fucking brutal
jacket. She picks up photographs of him. She picks up, that to me was like almost so real life. It was hard to go through.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. So basically my perspective is I knew he didn't make it, but I didn't know how it happened or when it happened. I assumed he was going to last a lot longer in this one. And I think it was a great decision in terms of it had to happen at some point. I think, you know, the death of a main character is often reserved for like close to the end of a story,
yeah,
at which point, like, it's hard to feel their absence because you're like, the story's over anyway. So it's like, that's it. So when you get rid of that, like earlier on, it kind of, it helps you connect with Ellie, you know, if you feel like the absence.
I think it is an incredible motivator for like a new journey. I mentioned this to you, and it provides, I would say, more motivation than most games give you for disliking, let's like in quotes, the antagonist, you know, like setting this up. This is, you feel exactly the same way Ellie does. There is a direct connection. Really, the only issue I took with it was this is another big like Walking Dead callback. You familiar with this moment?
Oh yeah, 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 yeah.
Like a major character is like it's like a baseball bat instead of
Glenn, right?
Yeah, I believe so. And it's like a huge like it was one of the big talked about moments from that show. I'm like, yeah, it's a little close, but it still works. It's a good. I think it hits very hard, of course. I feel like there was a lot of people who took issue with this game who just really couldn't come to terms with it.
It feels awful saying it out loud, but it's like this was a really good decision for them to make. And not only to kill off Joel, but to really put it in your face early to motivate you for the whole game.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it really is, like I said last time, I did not think this guy was going to survive very long. I didn't think, maybe you, if you wanted to kind of, if you were happy with the end of Last of Us 1, it's like, okay, they live together for a much longer time, whatever. But it's like anything else where you make a sequel, you got to go back to the well and everyone's lives are going to be put on the line again, you know? Yeah. So it's just inevitable.
Let me say this too. I wish I said this a few minutes ago when I was talking about this sequence. If you're the kind of person that thinks Joel is ultimately a villain of the first game, you kind of saw this coming, and that's why I kind of nodded my head and was like, all right, like give it to him. Like by that, I mean like, okay, put him down, I guess. Where I said, I'm not saying, am I saying Joel's the villain of the first game?
It's no.
I reject that wholeheartedly. I think the answer is no, but when you think about, he kind of damned the whole world
but
to lie
let
to
me
her,
tell
I'm
you
like,
this.
Fuck, man.
It's like, I see the perspective, but the way it's handled is
not
sweaty.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Like it's very like, you know, there's the alternate perspective too, where, you know, he could have let her die, and it's like, come on.
I think like it's hard for me to articulate this the right way. I think I said before, him dying this early is not surprising. It was not surprising to me because there is some aspect where perhaps you were the villain of the first game, even though I don't buy that.
Yeah. Well, if it's like, it makes narrative sense, yes. You know? So moving on a little bit here. So in this moment, of course, Abby's group lets the rest of the survivors go.
Yes.
And so after some time has passed, Tommy, Joel's brother, heads to Seattle in pursuit of this group, these people who murdered Joel. And Ellie and her girlfriend Dina are following close behind. So I want to mention very quickly that I this endeared me to Dina very early. I'm like, this is like a Master Samwise kind of situation where it's like, good for her, like, because this is going to be a fucking difficult journey, and it's like she goes along with it. I'm like, what a pal, you know, like I love that. But so it's here. You kind of, I think pretty much the majority of the game is set in Seattle. Yeah.
Yep. Yes, it is.
And it's crazy because it's so perfect that this is like, it's going to be like some of the most miserable times everyone has ever had. And it's in Seattle where it's always raining. It's always overcast. It's like the perfect setting. So it's revealed essentially that Abby's group is part of this Seattle militia called the Washington Liberation Front, WLF, or they call them the Wolves a lot.
Yeah.
And so after escaping an ambush earlier on, Dina actually reveals that she is pregnant via her ex-boyfriend, Jesse. And this guy actually shows up in Seattle to come after them soon afterwards. So Dina is helping you out a little bit at first, and then it's just kind of like she becomes incapacitated pretty quickly, and Jesse kind of takes over for her and assists Ellie with searching for Abby and her friends. So it's around that, like, there's a big kind of chunk of Ellie gameplay, and it's like the middle point where they run into the Seraphites. They call them the Scars because the founder had like a scar on her face. They all kind of do it to themselves, I think.
Yeah.
So this is like religious cult, I guess, that they all wear these like very plain brown garbs. They all use these very like medieval weapons and stuff. What did you guys think about this faction?
Is this the whistle segment where, like, if they notice you, they whistle?
That's the first thing, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, from a gameplay perspective, this fucking ruled.
Yeah.
Like, I remembered, like, but I'm trying to put this in the right words, where if you quote unquote kind of fail stealthing, there's a chance where you'll just get pegged with an arrow and yes. they'll whistle that they've hit you with
yeah.
something.
Yes.
I'm like, holy fuck, this fucking rocks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very scary.
It's very intense.
And we've talked about detail, attention to detail. I've seen YouTube clips where people go through and decipher what the whistles mean. Like, two whistles mean you got hit. Three whistles mean circle around. Like,
yeah.
there's a definite system to the way the whistles work. I feel like I've seen a lot of cult stuff in media.
Yeah, I mean, John does bring up a good point where I do feel like that's everywhere in like fantasy or fictional media. There is a religious cult that does this thing yeah. in modern society.
But not only that, the whistling is also from Walking Dead.
Is it really?
Yeah. Like the guy with the baseball bat, it's his oh. group. That's how they communicate with each other.
I mean, to be honest, I checked out right after season one. So yeah. Like,
but yeah, in terms of like original ideas, it's just like, it's distracting when you, yes. if you know about it, it's like, yep. oh, I've seen that before. Yeah. But you know, I don't know. I think when the way they integrated into gameplay was successful, it was nice to have an enemy faction that was a little different from everybody
the
else.
The fights with them gameplay wise are totally fascinating.
Yeah.
I just feel like I've seen a lot of cult stuff, and
story wise, maybe not so much.
I want to just go back for a second too. Yeah. We were talking about like the Dina section of the game. Okay, to me, the best part of Last of Us 1 is the interactions between Joel and Ellie.
Yeah.
If you're going to kill Joel, you've got to put somebody new in Ellie's life where the interactions are as deep or as interesting. In the whole first part of the game, I'm in Seattle. I'm being rained on. It's incredibly depressing. The person who's my companion is not as interesting to me
yeah.
as Joel. And this is where the story started to lose me a little bit.
Yeah. I think for me, I think that was definitely intentional to a point.
Oh, okay.
I think, you know, it's obviously like a big part of this is nothing can replace the hole that he has left
that
in
Joel
her life.
Has left,
even
yeah.
someone who loves her and is you know, is going to become, you know, her prospective like life partner yeah. is not enough to replace this huge wound that has been given to her. But
great
I think
point.
I think it's yeah, she's. I appreciated her that she, you know, made the decision to come along with you. In terms of the direction for her character, it kind of gets less interesting as she goes along.
Yeah.
But you hang out with Jesse a little bit more, and you wind up. There's a part in this game I did want to bring up. I mentioned during the pivotal hospital scene in the previous game, I felt like a lack of agency at one point, and I felt that here as well in a specific sense. Where so Ellie tracks down one of Abby's friends who was there when Joel died, called Nora. And she essentially is like, you know, that prick got what he deserved. And she chases after her. And like, she winds up like beating her with a pipe to like,
ugh.
Like basically to try and like find out where Abby is. This specific moment, it was just a tiny little break in the connection with the characters for me. Where I was there's this like a wolf base where you're infiltrating it as Ellie. I'm trying to be very careful. I have my pistol with the silencer on, right? And she confronts Nora and she's holding her up with the revolver. And Nora says, like, if you shoot me, everyone will know. And I'm like, not if I was using the gun that I wanted to use.
Oh, that's you know interesting. What I mean?
Yeah, it's a little bit immersion breaking.
It would be wow. very cool, you know, like one of those. So I mean, just a small little thing that I was like, oh, I fucking wish I could just take, you know, then we have no problem here. It would be resolved. But essentially, you know, she tortures her to find out that Abby is holding up in this aquarium on the far side of town. There's this basically it's all building up to this aquarium. There's a Ferris wheel on the horizon that's showing you where it is. And Ellie gets there, and this sort of comedy of errors results in she's confronted with two of the other people who are there, Owen and his girlfriend Mel, and their cute little puppy dog, and Ellie winds up killing all of them.
Oh.
And it's very like, so it's revealed after the fact that Mel was pregnant, and this obviously like it sickens Ellie to the point of just like. She's just like non-responsive, and Tommy shows up at this point, like takes her away from there. So what did you think about this moment?
This is hard to stomach, right? I feel like this is the moment where I said, oh, okay, I guess it's the Ellie revenge tour, right? Where you get a lot of these themes of like cycles of violence, and this game is overly violent and cruel, and Ellie's just going to go on a murdering spree. This is hard for me to dissect, where I don't know the right words for this other than I kind of did one of these like, I don't know how I feel about this. You know, I don't know how you guys feel, but I don't know. I'm not sure. I started to check out here a little in terms of
narratively.
I'm like, this is a little bit too much. I'm going to fucking torture somebody. I'm going to fucking kill everybody. And
yeah.
There's just so much killing and violence. I'm like, I don't know. John, how do you feel?
I totally think you make some great points. It didn't make me check out. I found it so depressing
Yes. And
so violent and so bleak. And I get you're trying to tell me a story where you talk to me about the price of revenge.
Yeah.
How if you go too far after revenge, it literally just eats away at your soul. It steals everything you have. They did what they wanted to do so effectively. I start to question, like, is this even entertainment anymore?
Yeah.
It's so bleak.
Were there any, like, this? I've said this phrase on the show a couple of times. It kind of makes my stomach hurt a little.
Oh.
You know what I mean? We're like, ah.
Okay, so my thoughts on, like, we're getting into the kind of the crux of the game here. I feel like it's a good time to bring it up, where it felt just a little manipulative to me, where, because we've kind of seen this, like, the price of revenge, this thing, like, a cycle of revenge and how, like, in all forms of media, including games, and, like, you know, kind of like what it turns you into and all this kind of stuff. And it's just like, it's tough for me because here's a good example. There's a part in the first Austin Powers movie where there's this henchman, and it's a very funny scene where, like, he's standing in front of a very slow-moving, like, steamroller, and they're like, get out of the way, and he just stands there screaming, and they run him over.
Yeah.
And then there's, like, a mid-credits scene where it's like someone goes to the henchman's family and informs them of his death, and it's like, it's something like, oh, you never thought about that, did you? That this innocuous, like, whatever guy had a whole family and everything, and it's like, there's a reason why they don't get into that, and it's like, you know, people are kind of, like, I don't know, it's just, it... Like, the guy who threatened to kill me over a parking spot a couple of days ago probably had a family as well, but I still hate him, you know?
Right,
like,
right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So that's where I'm at with this. It's like, I don't know if it's going to be effective, but...
I don't want to harp on this too long, but several moments of Ellie offing somebody in this game was like, did we have to do that? Like, is this what we're doing?
So bleak.
Like, is this... I don't know.
Can I say something? Yeah, and I'm curious what you guys think about this. After Joel dies, going through his house and sniffing his coat, I don't know, I just thought, like, wow, this is really moving and beautiful and artistic, but this middle section of the game just feels so bleak to me, and I don't know why. Like, why is it that Joel's funeral feels respectful and beautiful going through his home, and why is the middle of this game just like, geez, you guys are throwing me in the dirt, and you just keep pushing me under? Yeah.
Well, there's really no levity whatsoever.
Oh.
I mean, I'm going to bring this up in more detail later.
Yeah.
This game has a thing that I tend not to like in narrative structures, or we will debate this later. It's one of these things where if the characters just talk this out, a lot of the plot is undone and a lot of it is unnecessary.
Yeah.
And that happens in this game a lot. Example, like, you know, you said that, like, the funeral scene is, like, very
tasteful,
very
moving
tasteful.
And tasteful. Yeah.
There's a lot of these moments. I've said this so fucking much off mic. If Ellie just told people she was immune and I was the person on the operating table, it would undo a lot of the plot of the game. Like, okay, you're killing this pregnant lady and these boyfriends and you're torturing Nora. I'm like, oh my God, can you just talk it out? What is going on?
Yeah,
here?
But I, like I said to you off mic, I don't know how you feel about this, John, but it's like people don't talk about things that they should in real life either. You know,
it's
like
true.
It's like when they should, like, hash out their emotion. And, like, I believe Abby is aware that she was the girl that was infected. And it's like, it's knowing all that, and how much difference would it really make if it's like, like, number one, like it happens with Dina. She says, I'm immune, and Dina doesn't believe her.
Right.
Because no one else is immune. And, like, other people would probably react the same way.
Yeah.
So it's tough. But
I guess the point that I'm bringing up is killing Ellie is a bad decision. if you know who she is.
Yeah.
It's a bad decision. Tends to undo a lot of the plot for me starting here and moving forward.
Yeah, but number one, a lot of people don't know or believe, and number two, they probably don't care.
Maybe.
You know? That's where I'm looking at it from anyway.
Sure.
Well, you've got two characters who are blinded by revenge.
Yeah.
Or that's at least what they're trying to portray. That's the point of the story.
Yes.
Anyway, we can keep going.
Yeah.
So I think around this point you have this flashback that reveals that in between games, Ellie traveled back to the Firefly Hospital in Salt Lake City, where she learns what really happened and tells Joel that she doesn't want to speak to him anymore because she figures everything out. And I think this moment in particular, this was probably the most effective story moment for me, because it's between the two of them. It's really kind of paying off this lie and the characters are behaving in a believable, realistic way. It's kind of like I feel like there's a lot of, you know, when things are like no spoilers, it's usually about like a death. And it's like, this is like a spoilable moment for me it's like a big secret coming out, you know? And I like that about it a lot. And essentially you see Abby finds where Ellie is hiding in this moment, and she kills Dina's ex-boyfriend Jesse and has Tommy held hostage. And it's revealed also through a flashback that Abby was the daughter of the surgeon that Joel killed in the first game.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So how does this reveal land for you guys?
I don't know. I kind of laugh at it because it's one of the, you guys ever, sometimes I use the phrase, well, the plot demands that this happens.
Yeah.
The whole setup of The Last of Us 2 is that, you know, the surgeon who is going to operate on Ellie is Abby's dad. And so Abby is taking revenge on Joel because Joel killed her dad, but that is very specific. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
My dad was, I'm calling him a virologist. I don't know what the right word is.
Yeah.
My dad was the virologist that you killed, so I'm going to come get you. It is a very specific plot that needs to work out perfectly, right?
It's sweaty.
It's sweaty, for sure. I mean, I'm not saying I hate it, but it is very particular.
It's just a little, I think it's, I don't think it makes no sense.
No.
I think it is a little bit, the way it's just, this whole moral quandary, I think it just doesn't quite portray both sides as equally as it could, where you see in the past, you know, Abby having this relationship with her dad, and it's like, oh, he helped the zebra out of razor wire. He was actually a great guy. And like when they're discussing like the operation on Ellie, he's like, he really wants to do it. He's like, come on, come please, please, please let me cut her head off, please. It's going to save so many people, please. And then Abby's like, hey, if it was me, I'd want you to do it. And it's like, this is
that was a little bit much.
This
I
isn't really endearing
you.
Me to these characters. You know what you I mean?
That's why I brought up before, there were certain things in the first game. Remember I said, I wish the surgeon said something game. It could have set this up a little bit better.
Yeah.
He's just holding the scalpel. I'm going to do it, right? I wish they had a little bit more on who he is and why. Then again, it would undo the conceit or the deceit of this game, but it feels very like there are very specific people involved in this plot, and this plot has to go perfectly for you to believe in this.
It's less of a universal experience because
it's very, very like one-on-one to one-two.
So what we're saying, that's really, you guys are making me think, the big thing this game has to do, the hardest weight it has to pull storytelling-wise, is midway we have to switch to Abby and have sympathy for her and have empathy for her. But we're saying those storytelling beats were a little bit lazy. It's a little bit lazy to have her dad be this absolute hero of a doctor saving a giraffe.
Not necessarily, you know, lazy, but maybe could have been a little bit, add a little more dimensionality to it. Whereas I feel like a lot of the characters in Last of Us 1 did have that dimensionality.
Right. Yes. Like how do we get endeared to Joel and Ellie through all these like really specific, not overly sentimental moments? It might have been nice to have more moments like that to endear us. You can feel a little bit the game developers' fear of, we really got to make you like Abby quickly.
Because I believe there was this is the workshopped version of Abby. Like they were, like the playtesters was like, I really just don't like care for her. And then they made her more sympathetic in later drafts of the story. And so, you're right. So at this point, your perspective shifts to Abby, 3 days earlier. And so she is in this WLF compound, and she is convincing their leader, Isaac, to let her pursue her ex-boyfriend, Owen, one of the characters who's killed by Ellie, who went missing in the Seraphite territory where he was scouting out or something. So we'll get into any maybe perceived structural issues later, but how did you feel about having to play as Abby on a moment-to-moment basis?
I at least thought it was a little bit surprising that you do it.
Yeah.
And it's not a small segment. It is the second half of the game.
Yes, yeah. It is.
I was surprised at... We sort of kind of derided the length of this game in the beginning of the show. It is at least surprising that there is a second half of the game. And it is the Abby section.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It's not like a cute little like vignette of a thing. It is the entirety of the second half of the game, which is interesting. I guess, right?
No, I would argue it's a three-act game. You go Ellie,
oh, sure, of course.
Abby, and then California Ellie.
Right, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I think this was actually pretty well handled, where I didn't like at first how her segments felt a little bit more Gears of War-y. You know, like...
That's a great point.
She has, like, an armorer who fits her out with, like, this assault rifle and everything, and I'm like, I don't really... like. I don't know. Yeah. She's also a lot stronger, physically stronger than Ellie. And it's like, it's kind of that weird balance of where Ellie's strength is really like her resolve and her, you know, endurance. And if you contrast that with Abby, who is a lot more physically imposing.
Yeah.
So, but obviously I think over the course of this part of the game, you see that there are more like commonalities in both character and gameplay between the two of them than you might expect.
Yeah.
So
it's a little bit, I just want to say quick, it's a little bit of a relief to play as Abby, because Ellie, you have to be so stealthy and so slip and slidey, and Abby's just a brawler. You can go right into conflict with the infected.
Yes.
You can literally throw haymakers at infected.
You can. Yeah. You can beat the shit out of infected.
she literally like lives in a gym. She's just like unstoppable.
Yeah.
So there's a part here. So Abby gets captured by the Seraphites here, and she's rescued by these two kind of runaways called Yara and Lev.
Yeah.
And they are these escaped siblings who are being effectively pursued by the rest of the Seraphite tribe because Lev is transgender. So I think like this part is like the part where you have to escape. I think it really bangs. Mm-hmm. Like it's like the part where you're like in the rain and there's like infected coming at you and there's fires everywhere. And it's just Abby with like fucking hammer and just like laying them out. I'm like, let's go. I love that part.
Yeah.
But it's really like, so they eventually reach Owen, who is planning to desert. They're kind of set up in this aquarium. And they're Owen and Mel are planning to leave and regroup with potential like surviving fireflies in Santa Barbara, California.
Yeah.
So after being injured, Yara is like, they need to like remove her arm, I believe. It's like infected.
Yes, they do. They have to amputate it.
But Mel is a surgeon and she needs medical supplies to save Yara. So Abby is going to have to go back into wolf territory to get these medical supplies. And I was a huge, huge fan of this moment where you have to climb up a skyscraper and you have to cross these very like tenuous bridges at the top to cross over their territory. It's just like one thing that I like actually have not seen before. And that part is very like...
It's a vertigo.
You almost like, get a little bit of Mirror's Edge here.
Yes.
Right? We're like, yeah, my stomach is churning a little.
And you know, they seem to be very the scars are Seraphites. They're very like in control of their emotions and everything. So it's like she's like Abby is like, what, you people do this like all the time? It's just like ridiculous.
Yes.
Isn't it a big story point? Doesn't Abby have a fear of heights?
Oh, yeah, you could be right.
So. Yeah, I think it is a big story point. Yeah.
And It's interesting too, because so it's this, and then you have to go to the hospital, and then there's this sequence where it's almost like a boss fight in the basement with this big monster,
the Rat King.
Yeah,
the
Rat King. That was great. That was really intense.
Dude, way it better than the wicked. Dark Souls 2 Rat King.
God, yeah, that guy.
It was wicked intense.
That was really, because it was surprising, because we had never seen anything like that, you know, in this game before. And I think it's I'm going to bring up some comparisons later, but they kind of take a page out of the Halo 2 Arbiter section here, where it's like, we know this is a new character that you're not comfortable with, but we're going to let you do all this cool shit as them to like ingratiate you a little bit better with them, you know? Like Abby definitely has like the more exciting like action set pieces.
Yes,
and stuff,
she does.
I would say. So this is, so they get these supplies, but what happens is that Lev returns to the Seraphites Island settlement to try and convince his mother to leave the Seraphites with them. So Abby and Yara have to pursue him there. And after infiltrating this settlement, which I actually like this area a lot, it was very like lived in, very different looking from everything else we've seen before. And they find that Lev has accidentally killed his mother in self-defense because she was like, you're rejecting our ways and everything. It just couldn't be converted into you know, leaving. And this point, I think it's crazy because I have very mixed feelings about this game. But this segment, I think, is awesome, where the wolves like kind of begin this assault on the island.
Right.
And Abby is kind of caught by Isaac and these other guys and is branded a traitor for helping these runaways. Yara is kills Isaac to help them escape and is in turn shot by the other wolves. And this whole bit with the horseback escape through the burning village.
Yeah.
It's a cool set piece.
It looks amazing. It's really intense. It's like, am I going to make it out of here? It's very like biblical representation of the central themes.
Dude, this is their Uncharted moment, I think.
You think so? Yeah,
absolutely.
There's a couple of Uncharted moments.
Just this big kind of like Cain and Abel, you know, just like destructive nightmare. And I feel like this, if anything, captures like the essence of it more than anything else. So basically what happens here is that Abby and Lev return to Owen and Mel's hideout to find them killed by Ellie. And this very conveniently placed map by Ellie shows them exactly where she's hiding out. Yeah. And so you cut back to kind of where you left off with them, where Abby shoots Tommy. You think that she kills him, but as we learn later, it's not the truth. Yeah. And Greg and I were having some funny conversations about this part of the game.
Is this the boss fight between like Abby and Ellie?
So you want to talk about this?
Yeah, sure. So I'm gonna be as genuine as I can. This is probably the worst part of the game, if you ask me.
Yeah, I agree.
Where I thought this was, I said this when I was playing. Oh, you just reminded me it's a video game. I don't like it anymore.
Yeah,
right? Where, come on, man. Like, you have to do this stealth boss sequence where Ellie's the boss and you play as Abby. Dude, I'm out. Like, this, I've been reminded it's a video game. Also, I don't want to kill Ellie, like, as the player.
Right,
that is my character. Like, I don't want to. I don't know if you guys did this.
Did they think that it was going to,
I don't know. Wait, hold on. I did this. I purposely let Ellie kill me a couple of times.
Yeah. Oh, to see what might happen.
I was like, wait, if this is a choice between the two, fuck Abby, I'm all set.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Dude, this is a bad boss fight. I thought this was bad game design. Bad, 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 naughty. I almost said naughty. Like naughty dog.
Dog.
Very,
naughty
very
dog.
Bad, Neil. Very bad. Like, I don't know what you guys think, but this is a bad choice, in my opinion.
I thought Ellie was a fearsome boss. She was scary, the way she would sneak around and come at you. But I agree, it felt very video gamey.
Very video gamey, and it's really, it makes me wonder, like, because like, here's my perspective. I think this is where the two perspective approach reaches its fail state for me.
Yes.
Where, sure, I like Abby more than I used to, like spending some time with her, you know, and seeing the kind of, you know, just because you belong to the Seraphites doesn't mean you follow their beliefs completely and vice versa and all that stuff. But I still don't want to watch her harm Ellie, and I definitely don't want to be in control of her while she does it.
Yeah,
you know?
And do you know what absolutely took me out of the experience? Like, so like I told you, I purposely let Ellie kill me.
Yeah.
And there's an on-screen loading screen help hint. Oh, well, Ellie does this and she's vulnerable when this happens. I'm like, oh my God, I'm so checked out.
Yeah.
Like, I can't believe they gave me a loading screen tip of how to defeat Ellie.
Defeat the main character.
Huge thumbs down. Like,
could
giant.
This have just been a cutscene?
Yes.
Almost been more effective.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I'm not saying that that you can't break or bend rules here, but I think something I really admired about, I mentioned Halo 2 earlier, you never see the Arbiter, an alien, kill humans. You never see him fight or try to harm the Master Chief. That leaves the door open for redemption. And the same thing happens Metal Gear Solid 2 with Raiden. He's never like harming Snake or fighting Snake or you know anything like that. It's like you have a new character from a different perspective, and eventually, you know, they may not like each other at first, but they eventually kind of learn to respect each other at least. And this is like, I feel like it's just a little too far for me to really forgive and you know, just the nature of this story, and especially this boss fight, I just thought was really like misguided.
Very.
But okay, so let's you know, I don't know. I have one more thing to say, actually.
Sure.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think what you really needed structurally was to have maybe you start this story with another successful portrayal of a young woman and her father, Abby and her father, and get to know them first and foremost. And you make them both incredibly sympathetic and built up to this moment where Joel kills him. And then you maybe even like end the game there and you have this big cliffhanger, right? For part three or whatever.
Yeah.
But in terms of, it's very hard to, after watching Abby do what she does, really like get into her shoes right there. You know, it's tough. It's a big ask.
It's a big ask.
Yeah.
And it's a testament to how effective the relationship is between Joel and Ellie.
It's what people liked about it.
Yeah, and it's the best part.
It's taking it away is a bold move, but it's like, what do you replace it with? What is the answer?
Dude, you can't beat the father-daughter relationship of the first one. You can't surpass it.
It's really like the biggest strength, right?
Yeah, you can't.
So it's tough. But let's just get into the next part here. So the story flashes forward several months to Ellie and Dina living on a farm, raising Dina and Jesse's son. And they lead a peaceful life raising sheep like Joel always wanted. That's what he said he always wanted. Ellie is still haunted by his murder and experiences panic attacks that, you know, sounds or anything set her off that remind her of the incident.
I think that PTSD sequence is unbelievable at the farm. It's so well handled.
As much as you try to let it go, it keeps haunting you,
yeah.
And essentially, so it is revealed that Tommy survived. He's just kind of, he's blinded in one eye after this. And he gives Ellie information on Abby's whereabouts. So despite Dina's protests, Ellie leaves to find her again. And what I did want to mention that I thought was interesting about this is that they give Ellie several opportunities to leave well enough alone. Like each day in Seattle is kind of like, well, you made it through that. Are you really going to go back out there?
Are you
going
to keep going?
And then this in particular is a real like, yes, if I don't have anything else, this is what matters the most to me. Like I need to resolve this trauma. And so essentially what happens here is that Abby and Lev are shown arriving in Santa Barbara, where they make contact with the Fireflies through some like ham radio equipment and one of their old bases. And they're regrouping, allegedly, at Catalina Island. But they are captured here and tortured. It's seemingly, like, enslaved by this, like, local gang. The Tunnel Snakes?
Yeah, they're called Fallout. Slavers.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're slavers.
The Rattlers or something.
Yeah, the Slavers from Fallout.
Yeah. So how did you feel about the arrival of this faction, this presence of this faction?
I was kind of all set with the game at this point, where I remember playing this very late at night, and I said, oh my God, there's an Act 3. Oh my God, of course we're going to go out and get revenge again. I can't. Yeah. Also, like, after that really bad, like, Ellie-Abby boss fight, I was just kind of like, can this game end? Like, where is this going to end?
There's a good, 5 hours left that point?
Yeah, I was not huge on this segment in general.
It really felt like, oh my God, we're starting a new chapter, and I'm exhausted.
Exactly.
Like, oh my God.
But not in a good way. It wasn't It wasn't like the Deadly Premonition thing where, oh wait, it's not over. Holy fuck, this rules. It's like, oh my God, this
isn't over. And
it's like,
we're going to a new state, and you're fully fleshing out California, and it looks beautiful, but my God.
It's not quite as long as the other. I mean,
it's shorter.
It's much, much shorter, but it's at this point, it's really kind of like dragging your ass across the concrete, you know, like I think structurally it makes sense. If the game was like the other sections were shorter, I wouldn't have minded it as much. But I was really like gasping for air.
Yeah, sure.
So I think
I'm curious. Can I just ask? I'm curious. Are you guys because I'm so anti-Ellie at this point. I'm like, you've got a baby, you've got a partner, you caused so much death trying to get Joel, you know, get Joel's killer. You got to let this go now.
Number one, you're right. I agree. I think I would have felt a little bit more emotionally compelled if this was not a 5-hour gameplay segment. If this was a, hey, we know where Abby is and Ellie really wants to go, there's no raiders, rattlesnakes, what, I don't care what they're called, tunnel snakes.
Rattlesnakes.
Like, if that doesn't exist.
Tunnel snakes rule.
Well, all I'm saying is, like, let's say they just brought you to the final segment where there's a final conversation with her,
yeah,
and Abby.
Yeah, does there have to be yet another hunt?
Like, if you just go there, and if you, almost like, there are so many games that have done this where they bring you to the final confrontation and it is quite brief.
Yeah.
This is like another fucking thing.
I know. God. I agree. It's too much.
It's, well, here's the thing. This may surprise you about me. I like to think of myself as a very compassionate and generous person, but if somebody like crosses me, I'm very petty. So this segment, like, I was like, I was still on board, like, not on board with like this, like, the experience of playing it, but in terms of like I totally get it. Like, she can't get over it. Nothing. Like, we gotta put this to bed.
Hold on. I understand the emotional. It's unresolved.
Yeah.
Like, you have to go do this. I get that. I was in for that. I just don't like what they make you do.
No.
What
yeah,
they make you play.
Completely.
I agree. If she says I'm leaving my family, and then the next scene is her confronting Abby, that might have been a lot more
effective.
Or they
bring you right to, I don't fucking remember exactly what the set piece is. If they bring you right to the fortress, you're right there.
Yeah,
like, you're right there's no there. Walking through town. There's no that weird part where you're swinging on a pole and you get stabbed in the side. And I'm all set with this.
Yeah.
Just bring me right there.
I just like,
I agree with that.
It's really just like, imagine this happened to you where you lost everybody and then someone came into your life who was like not related to you and had the choice to leave you, whatever, and then you formed this bond that is really just kind of, it defined you, and then someone forced you to watch as they savagely fucking crushed his head with a blunt instrument. I would be haunted by that for the rest of my life. I would probably see it through until it destroyed me. You know, like,
okay.
Like I said,
emotionally, tonally, absolutely, we need to go finish this.
Yeah, yeah.
100%. But let's move on here. Let's keep going.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, this a little bit out of nowhere, a little bit indulgent, we'll say. But another thing about this faction is that, like, there's a lot of like shades of gray in this game, and these guys were pretty definitively evil.
That's
it's
true.
Like, it's kind of putting the whole thing into question. Like, what
kind
of
caricature-y?
Yeah. It's like, what are you really saying? You know? So Ellie arrives at Santa Barbara here, wipes out all the tunnel snakes and rescues the prisoners. And then they point you. She's like, "Where's Abby?" And like, "Oh, she tried to escape." And she's probably dead by now, is what they tell you. And so you go out onto this beach, and there are all these people who have been effectively like crucified on these big pillars.
Yeah.
Like, she's out at the pillars or whatever. And I thought there was actually a really nice misdirect here, where it's at one of Abby's big defining characteristics, she has a long braid. The first one in your direct eye line has a braid, and it's like, is this her? And it's just some other dead girl.
Oh, wow.
And then you turn around and Abby is like, looks nothing like how she used. She's like emaciated.
Yeah.
She has like very like few tufts of hair left and all this stuff. So effectively what happens here is Ellie cuts her down, and it's a big, like, I was really like, are you sure you want to do this? Like, you came here to kill her. Like, it's really, it felt like a, like almost like a WWE moment, like Stone Cold is like, "Get your ass down off that cross so I can pin you back up there myself." You know what I mean? Like, yeah. What are you doing here? So she basically takes her down, and then Abby takes Lev off of his like pillar or whatever. And what happens is they are kind of in the process of escaping, and Ellie remembers again, and she says, "I can't let you leave." And then, so you get this final
Metal Gear Solid
very
four.
Metal Gear boss fight with the two of them. And so it's inevitable. I think I really like the composition of the simplicity of, you can really only see the two of them in like the ocean, and it's just that and the reflection of the sky and everything. It's just very simple. It's just the two of you left. You know, that's, this is all, it's what it's all coming down to.
It's The Last of Us.
It's The Last of Us. The problem I have with this scene is that Abby is described as being like tortured, close to death. How the fuck does she still have any energy to like fight in this moment? It's crazy to me.
Isn't this like, I just feel like I understand why you had to finalize this resolution and go find Abby.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, why is there like a punching boss fight? Like,
wouldn't it have been enough to just see how messed up she was?
Or wouldn't I'm just, listen, it's not one of these moments where Greg, you didn't direct this.
Right.
But it's one of these things where when you see her up there, you know, essentially like being crucified, even if I give you the benefit of the doubt where Ellie wants to cut her down and talk to her,
yeah,
have it be a conversation, like a final moment.
Yeah.
Like, rather than like, it's now like kind of a weird punching sequence. Like, I don't know.
Like almost a boxing moment.
It's almost a boxing match. Yeah. And I just wish this was directed differently. Have the final conversation with like, I know you did this and I know you did that, but we're done here.
I want to say, isn't there a movie where something like this happens where it's like, I came here to confront you and you're like a shell of what you used to be, kind of thing. And I feel like that it may have felt anticlimactic maybe, but I felt like that was really the moment to have her have a change of heart is when she sees Abby.
I think they made a lot of mistakes in this game, but I think the moment where they made a big crucial error was when Ellie says, I can't let you leave.
Yeah.
No, like you got to have the final conversation and let them go. Right. Or some sort of, they kind of do it anyway, where you don't end up killing Abby.
It's like a have your cake and eat it too moment.
Exactly. Just let it, if you got that final moment of like Ellie letting it go, I would have been like, my stomach doesn't hurt anymore. I get it. No, but anyway.
I mean, your resolution would have been her resolution, right? So what happens here is Ellie is trying to drown her, comes pretty close, and Abby bites off two of Ellie's fingers, Gollum style.
Lord of the Rings style.
Yeah, it's right there. And she ultimately, you know, has that change of heart after thinking of like Joel on the porch playing guitar or something, and lets them kind of sail away to wherever. So, I mean, this is a really interesting, and we've talked this to death almost, but I have a kind of an interesting quandary for you guys here. Would these games have been, what would you think of any kind of branching story paths in these games?
Oh, you mean like you make a decision,
like,
you know,
like the Walking Dead games?
Oh, I mean, well, I think the big one is like, does Abby kill Ellie or does Ellie kill Abby in the boss fight?
Or does she forgive?
Yeah.
Or, you know, does Joel kill the doctor? Like stuff like that.
Oh,
you know?
Well, I mean, I think the big one here is like, if you choose to essentially beat the fuck out of Abby and she bites your fingers off, then you get the ending where you can't play the guitar and you shouldn't have done this.
Right, now right. That's what it felt
here's
like,
the
right?
Thing, right? I did just get a little emotional chill because it's almost like I hated so many of the directional choices, even though they kind of make sense, where you do get that final moment where Ellie tries to play the guitar and she can't. And that's like the one thing that she has left of Joel is that he taught her how to play.
Yeah.
And now she can't do that either.
Well,
it's almost like a teaching moment that feels bad. Right,
yeah.
Where you shouldn't have done this because now you have nothing.
Well, because it's very, you know, the symbolism is clear where it's like there's, she still has, here's the thing, she can't hit the bar chords anymore, neither can I. It's fucking hard. But like, it's effective in that, like, you know, she still can play some stuff, but like there's voices missing, like she can't hit a couple of the strings, you know, so something about her will always be lost. But it really, to me, feels like, all right, so there's this part where, so she lets him get away, and then she goes back to the farm, where I like that it's very idyllic the first time you see it. It looks like a painting. It's all very colorful. And then when you go back, it is very, like, overcast and, like, miserable looking.
Yeah.
And then it's essentially what it seems is, like, the implication being that it was too late for her to get resolution or redeem herself.
Yeah.
Like you said, it feel like, what does she have to show for it at the end? Absolutely nothing. And it's like, it doesn't feel like there was any sort of, even like down to her soul, a reward for letting Abby go. It feels like you got the bad ending either way.
Yeah.
You know, like, and it sucks because it's like, I feel like just not enough agency, maybe. I don't know. It's weird.
Well, it's a story about hate.
Yeah.
And we're forced to follow this character along a tragedy. And the one thing, just going back, I can understand Abby I can understand Ellie wanting to cut Abby down because she literally thinks there's got to be something I can do to you, Abby, that's going to make the pain of my loss go away.
Right.
And that's ultimately what the tragedy is. Like, revenge is not going to deal with the pain.
Right.
Right? You have to deal with your pain in other ways.
I think you're 100% right. It's just... There's a quote I heard about this game. I'm not gonna say who said this, but there's a game director out there who said, "I understood the story of The Last of Us 2. I read it. I don't like it." And I am not too far from that opinion, where I understood what happened here and I don't like it.
Yeah.
I just feel like there is really no, like, the conclusion of this game, I didn't feel any kind of optimism or hope like you did at the end of the first game.
What message are you sending?
Yeah, well, so I'm kind of getting into my final thoughts here, if that's okay. So I think there are some aspects of this game that communicate the themes quite well, but there are an awful lot of them that make you question like what the point is. And it's like the length of time you really have to spend in this world is so harrowing. Like another reviewer I was reading was said, like, it takes 2 hours to watch like a harrowing movie, like The Road, something like that. And you're spending 30 hours in The Last of Us 2. Like, it really, I had to psych myself up like after a hard work day to like, and you know, just, all right, here we go.
Here we go again.
And I don't think, you know, it necessarily has to be conventional entertainment. It's just, we're kind of seeing what it looks like when you spend 30 hours in a miserable nightmare and it doesn't feel good. I don't think I learned anything. It feels like there's so much violence and just like when you shoot somebody, they're like screaming in pain until they die. You're like blowing people's arms and legs off.
Dude, I go back to that quote where I understood it and I don't like it. Like, I get what you're doing.
Because it makes me, I can't tell like what the objective was where I consider like, is it like when Hank Hill catches Bobby smoking a cigarette and he says, all right, you know, you have to smoke 100 cigarettes. Like, is it to make you not want to play games or not want to kill people in games? Or is it like to think about it a little bit more? I don't know.
It's just, we could talk about this for so long and kind of do a revolving door argument here. I just think there were certain moments where if you just turn the other direction, the whole game feels more digestible. If you if the director... if did not do what you did, like, the game would feel a little bit better. There were a couple of moments where that could have happened, which we've already talked about.
Yeah.
At what point does Ellie stop?
Yeah.
And what are you teaching by that happening?
I'm going to get on my high horse for a minute. I feel that storytellers have a responsibility.
Sure.
When you're going to create a story that millions of people are going to digest.
Huge audience,
what are you doing by just putting them in a slog and just continually pushing them under the ground? It just feels like every violent beat in this game, it was like, how can we make this as violent and as horrific as possible? And I really like stories that touch on how dark things can get, but then give us some level of hope or redemption at the end.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this thing was just... I mean, I'm thinking about the scene where Ellie is trying to kill one of Abby's friends. I don't know if you guys remember this, like a person who's connected with Abby is playing like a little Walkman video game.
Oh yeah.
And you like stab her directly in the throat.
Yes.
And blood just spews and goes everywhere. And it's like, oh my God, guys. Like, I can argue you made your point. Like, revenge is not going to make my pain go away.
Like, quite early, you know? Like,
but
quite
boy,
early
could there have been some uplift, some emotional... I guess we're supposed to believe that final scene between Joel and Ellie, where they were at least going to try to repair their relationship as some kind of hope. But this game is just too much of a slog for me. That's my final thought.
I'd like to make a statement where, John, I think you have said one of the most thoughtful things on all five seasons of goddamn GameCube. Mm-hmm. I'm not being ironic. You said you have a responsibility to your audience, right? Millions of people are going to play this. So what message are you sending?
Yeah.
I mean, I would snap my fingers in real life for that. Absolutely.
Are you just going to depress the fuck out of people? Like, the point?
And God, you do have a responsibility when you're telling this kind of story, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, I think especially when you're trying to make broader points about real life, too. I mean, I was going to bring up you know, Neil Druckmann speaks about how, like, growing up in Israel informed this, like, the direction of, you know, themes of this game with respect to the cycle of violence, cycle of revenge. I think it's a very fruitful idea on paper, executed much more tastefully in the movie Munich, great movie, about that specific situation. But it seems like the intent was not really to create, like, a direct allegory to the relationship between those two states. And it only kind of, like, takes notes, like, the WLF, PLF, kind of, like, they don't really align, like, it's in terms of that. But it's inherently troublesome because of that specific situation. It's so incongruous. You brought this up earlier with, like, how specific it was that it was, like, that doctor and getting revenge for that doctor. It's really not making the universal statement that it should be.
No.
You know what I mean?
Not at all.
I think there's just a lot of conflicting factors here. I just have a couple more things to say. So you're like, you're rooting for Ellie, right, in the beginning, because she was one of the protagonists of the first game, and we feel the same way about Joel as she did. And as the game progresses, it becomes clear that this was the most important relationship in her life, and she will forever be incomplete without him. And there is seemingly no way to resolve this trauma, and everything that follows in the wake of Joel's murder feels just like suffering just for the sake of suffering. You know what I mean? Like, I get it. Like, the only constant between you and the characters is that you both feel miserable.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Can I ask you guys a question?
Yeah.
If they make a Last of Us Part 3 and it has somewhat hopeful, if it ends on somewhat of a humane note, is it possible we look at this game more favorably as like this in-between chapter?
You and I, the Dark Empire Strikes Back.
Well, yeah, you and chapter. I actually had a similar thought. What I was going to say right before you said that was, I have this vision of in my brain of like after Ellie cuts down Abby essentially from the cross,
yeah.
I almost have a vision of her kind of picking her up by the hand and saying, we're not doing this anymore. Like, we're not going to fight this out
right.
anymore.
Yeah.
Let's actually try to resolve this. You know who I am. I know who you are. Let's actually try to almost quote unquote save the world or do something positive. Yeah. We're not doing this anymore.
Yeah.
But that doesn't happen. And now I feel shitty.
I know. Right? Me too.
But it's also tough because you are seeing Abby's side of things, but Ellie didn't.
Right.
Really.
You right,
know?
Right. So that's but what I mean is like you if they just did that, where when you almost like you cut her down just to pick her up and say, we're done here. And I'm not coming after you, you're not coming after me.
Yeah.
Or we're gonna collaborate. Either one.
Yeah.
I would have taken either.
Sure. I think, yeah. So this is final thought on like the series and everything. I think if anything, Last of Us Part 3 would be an older Ellie kind of, and then, you know, I really hope it's not a fucking 30-hour journey across America again. I think the only real way to resolve her character is if she willingly like sacrificed herself to science.
I think you're right.
I think all of us have the same opinion. The only way for it to end is she becomes the cure. And so all of this pain and hate and awful shit happened and it shouldn't have, but at least we got it.
And it's really like, you know, Joel, you gave me a life. You let me live, you know, you let me experience the world. Like, you know, I didn't die as a 14-year-old, but now it's time. This is what I can do with the rest of my time is hopefully save everybody else.
Yeah.
That has been in my brain for our whole discussion.
But it's really like, how long do you need to communicate that? You know what I mean? It's like, is it going to take another 30 hours? Like, I don't know.
Do you guys want a part 3 if it was up to you?
Wow. I mean, I think half of my brain says no because I can't stomach any more contentious Reddit debate about these games anymore.
Okay,
other half of me says I'm so unhappy with how The Last of Us 2 was directed for the most part. I almost need it. Yeah. I need a 3 like to make me feel better.
Sure. I think I have some, you know, about the series in general. I think you get the impression that they definitely wanted to lend a greater legitimacy to this medium by kind of including like superficial qualities of films, novels, stuff like that. But I feel like they failed to kind of take advantage or worse, inhibit games' inherent interactivity or player agency in a lot of ways. So I think in some ways it's like it's worse that it's a game, like that you have some degree of control. It would be better if it was completely out of your hands and you were just seeing this unfold.
Well, that's interesting.
I feel like it's just like it creates this divide between you and the characters, and it would be the ideas and the emotions. If there was a more harmonious connection between you, it would land a little bit better.
Mm.
I think basically, so final thoughts on the series for me, I think great productions, you know, unarguable. This one just made me feel like irreprovably like depressed. And I feel like both games are kind of held back by how much they lift from other media. It reminds me of like, oh, I'm thinking about Children of Men, Walking Dead, 28 Days Later, all this stuff. It just takes me out of it a lot. And I think a lot of it has been done before and better. So it's really like this game is where those issues started to compound for me a little bit. So do you want to get into final thoughts or grades or
sure.
What do you guys think?
I'll give my final thoughts and then I'll grade.
Yeah.
I think I said it earlier, the father-daughter relationship of The Last of Us 1 is just not surpassable.
Yeah.
Like I'm not saying by any game, I mean by a sequel. The Ellie, I've said this so many times online, the Ellie revenge tour is not as effective as the father-daughter of the first game.
Do you think they just shouldn't have made a sequel?
In a way, yeah.
Yeah.
Where I almost invoked a Riley quote, but I didn't do it. Where you had said previously where you didn't say it about The Last of Us, you said it about Horizon.
Yeah.
You said if this game was its own curiosity and that was it, I would like it more. I almost think that. Where if The Last of Us was only the first game and that's what you have, that is like, that was one of my top games of that decade.
Yeah.
I remember that story very well, and I agree. But now it's been sullied a little bit by the second one.
You can only think about how much worse it's going to get for them.
Sure.
You know?
So I think really to wrap it all up here, I find the first one to be very emotionally effective. The Last of Us 2 is a very good production. Like, it is a very good video game. Mm-hmm. However, I understand it. And I didn't like it. It makes me feel a little gross. And by I didn't like it, I mean too much violence. It is gross and depressing and overly violent for the entirety. I feel a little gross playing it, specifically for the violent portions. Mm. So for me, that I can't have this game, if we're talking about grades, I can't push this game into the C range because the production is too good. Like I have to go B minus, the lowest B minus I could give.
Okay.
Go ahead, John.
I agree with you. The production's incredible. The gameplay is amazing. The set pieces are amazing. The visual detail and the environments are incredible. That movie theater, that aquarium.
Yeah.
Just gorgeous set pieces for this game. But yeah, I'm like I said, storytellers have a responsibility, and this just was too much of a depressing slog for me. I love your grade, Greg. B minus.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's interesting because you do want to have creators to have like the freedom to tell the stories they want, but in terms of, you know, you're going to have this thing that's going to communicate to like millions of people. What is your point? And it's really hard to tell in this one what the intent was. So I am going to stray into C+ for this one. Mm-hmm. I think that is what they have earned with all their quality of life production aspects. I think all that stuff is incontestable. It's just that I had a miserable time playing it. I never want to play it again. And I disagree with a lot of the story decisions. And that's my final thought.
Awesome.
Okay. Thank you guys very much for discussing The Last of Us. A lot of good discussion here. Very thoughtful. And we will see you next time on Goddamn GameCube. Thank you.